Thank you for tuning into the VF1 show with VF and Vincenzo, the podcast that discusses all things business, marketing, politics, and government within the world of Formula One. If that's your thing, then you found the right place. So without further ado, it's lights out and away we go.
Welcome back to the VF1 show. I'm Vincenzo Landino. On the other side of the ear pods, I don't know, AirPods, headphones, whatever you want to call it. VF, what's going on over there, VF? I know you got a big week coming up. I'm excited for you.
Yeah, how you feeling? I don't know how to feel. Like, I mean, I hate to put it this way, but it's like, how would you feel if you were graduating from one of like the best colleges in the world? And it's just a very bizarre feeling right now. Because I'm like, I don't like telling people where I went to school to begin with. I have that complex. So for me, it's it's exciting.
You have every right to be super excited and every right to be nervous. Nervous, is that the word? Or so congrats.
Thank you.
From all the listeners here at VF1 show.
Congrats. Who don't know, I'm graduating from Harvard. Next week, and
no big deal. Good for you. We have a packed show. There is a lot to talk about, a lot that just happened right before we recorded. We're talking a little bit about F1 revenue for Liberty Media. McLaren's Andrea Stella made some comments about simplifying F1 regulations. Not sure if I'm shocked coming from McLaren. The weather in Imola will be a big topic. And ironically, we'll be talking about Sebastian Vettel as well and pushing fossil-free fuels. He has an involvement with a fuel company. And he wore a shirt. I don't know if you remember this. He wore a shirt to the first Miami Grand Prix saying that the city of Miami would be underwater. First underwater Grand Prix, he had this shirt on. And I think he said 2035 or something like that. The date was on there, and here we are. Imola has been canceled. Let's start off with that one, only because it's so pressing, and I think what's happening there in Italy this week has been just awful, to the point where F1 rightfully canceled the race. Why don't you just give us a quick rundown of the events of what happened in the Emilia-Romagna region?
Yeah, so on Tuesday, the paddock was evacuated, and I heard a rumor that AlphaTauri was evacuated from their team hotel. The region has been under a red level warning, which is the highest warning possible when it comes to weather. They predicted 270 millimeters of total rainfall by Thursday. And more rain is on the way, was supposed to be on the way on Saturday during quali. So it's not a good situation. I think there's been 8 deaths in the region so far. It's horrible what they're experiencing. And so F1 rightfully so said, basically to summarize their statement, that we don't want to take away from resources because they're actually having to use their police and medical, et cetera, for actual life-saving measures right now. And so, yeah, that was the best call that F1 could have made. I think it was the most selfless call they could have made, because we know, we talked about last week how F1 is obsessed with money and driving revenue right now. And so this is a big loss for F1, but it was ultimately the best call.
Yeah, and there was 14 rivers in the region that actually burst their banks. Which is absolutely wild. The longest one, the River Po, probably the one that many people are familiar with, also broke its banks. And that after that happened, I believe there was some 600 or so firefighters that were deployed from across Italy to assist with evacuations. There's residents, that are either trapped or, just not able to get out. It's a wild situation. I highly recommend looking it up so you can kind of see what we're talking about. AlphaTauri, their headquarters is in Faenza, which is about 30 kilometers from where the track is. And the city of Faenza, I watched a video just before we started recording, completely underwater. It literally looks like it's Venice. You would think it's if you've never seen any pictures of Italy, or if you don't know where you are in Italy, you'd be like, oh, that must be Venice or something, right? Those are canals in Venice. It's not. It's literally the streets of Faenza. They said Ravenna is completely unrecognizable. It's so much damage it suffered. And of course, a lot of these disasters are linked to climate crisis. I'm not going to turn this into a climate crisis podcast, but these torrential rains, right after they just had droughts. They just had months of drought there.
Yeah.
And now we have torrential rain. Back in February, Lago di Garda or Lake Garda had record low water levels. And Venice had extremely unusually low tides. So all that just recently happened. And now you get just dumped with all this rain in the region or in the area. And, you know, it's just kind of a setup for disaster. I'm happy that Formula One made the right call on this. You know, you and I were talking a little bit before this. And I was talking to some others who genuinely didn't know what F1 would do, right? Like, are they gonna make this call? Are they gonna do this? What's the deal here? But you know, when you're asking everybody to leave the area, you know, get out, evacuate, this was the only right move. Now, we'll shift focus onto what F1 could do with the calendar. I know I saw something that said there would be no race this year. Then I saw something else that said potentially find another spot for it on the calendar. There is that long August break, and because we already kind of had that break last month with the Chinese Grand Prix missing, maybe they can throw it in there during the August break. I don't know. Obviously, that's probably the last thing on anyone's mind in the area. But if they want to go ahead and add the race again, I feel like that might be the only time to add it, but it would be really hot it is in Europe in August. It would be extremely hot. I don't know. I don't know if that's the best move. It sounds like they also will not be racing there in 23. So the next time we could see Imola on the calendar would be 26. I don't know. It's kind of, you know, Imola has a lot of history. I actually just put out a video this morning that I had already recorded and edited prior to the news. But Imola, it came up in 1981 originally because it was to satisfy the overwhelming interest of Formula One in Italy, right? So they could have two Grand Prix. Monza, the Italian Grand Prix, and then this other one in Imola. It's been home to Schumacher dominance. He won 5 in a row. He's won 7 overall at the San Marino Grand Prix, which it's not even held in San Marino, but that's the name that they gave it. It was at this track. Ayrton Senna and Roland Ratzenberger tragically died in the same weekend on this track. So there's a lot of things that have happened here. There's a lot of history. There is... I don't know, it means a lot. It's a track that's named after Enzo Ferrari and his son, Dino. There's just a lot. I know there's a lot of folks that say, well, it doesn't create, there's not great racing here. I don't know, maybe it's just a little more sentimental to some of us. But so we may not see it again until 26 if we do at all. Interesting. It sucks if this is kind of the way it goes out is... because it had to get canceled. But again, the right move. I'm grateful. I know I have a lot of folks that are in the region that told me how bad it is, that it's really, really bad. And there was a lot of folks that my cousin who works in that area, he actually said, I highly doubt they're going to have a Grand Prix. He told me this 2 days ago. He's like, I really doubt it's going to happen. And sure enough, F1 made the right call. I want to push this into... Oh, go ahead. If you have something else to add on this one.
I was going to say, what's interesting is that if you went on social media, there were people saying, oh, it's not that bad. Yeah, my buddy just sent me pictures of it. It's not that bad. I would be shocked if they canceled it. And it's just like, what photos were your friends sending you? Because the ones we're seeing are pretty bad.
Yeah, I mean, the track also sits on a river, essentially.
Exactly.
The circuit is right next to the river, Isn't it? And
turn seven, it's like right there.
I believe it's turn seven, yeah. Or it's like the paddock. The paddock sits almost abuts the river, and so that overflowed.
Yeah, but it's crazy because you would think, because F1 sends its advanced team usually on, you know, Sunday, Monday, that's the film crew, production, they're setting everything up. You would think with that much rainfall that they would have said by Tuesday, like, this isn't going to happen. Like, why wait till Wednesday? Teams are supposed to arrive, you know, today or tomorrow. I get it that they had to make a quick call, but you would think when they're unpacking equipment, they're like, this isn't going to happen. I don't know.
Yeah. And the thoughts here, I mean, my thought, just to kind of think of the other side of the coin, is that, you know, maybe potentially didn't realize it was going to be as bad as it was, or, you know, it is our first European race of the season, maybe trying to hang on to that by any thread. I do believe that even if they don't get any more rain, the fears are that water that's coming down from the mountains will still continue to cause more issues and mudslides and things like that. Yeah. So there's a greater threat than just the immediate rain piece of this situation. There's a lingering threat. So again, the right call, and I'm not going to chastise them for when they made it. I think it's, you know, the fact that they made it at all is good.
Yeah.
But it does bring us to our good old friend Sebastian Vettel. And I think it was last year. It was last season. He tested Nigel Mansell's Williams using a sustainable fuel. And I don't know a ton about the fuel itself. You probably know more than I do, but he has been driving. He actually told a German newspaper that he's been driving his old race cars with these e-fuels, and he's been racing them at Goodwood. But he wants to show that F1 or, you know, other racing series can actually do this, and they can drive just as fast with these, you know, carbon neutral fuels. What do you think about synthetic fuels? Are they the future? And of course, there's something lingering over this that you and I both would agree with, which I'll bring up if you don't. But I want to hear what you think. Do you think the synthetic fuels truly are, you know, where we're headed in motorsport?
Perhaps. I'm not 100% sure. It would have to be cost effective. That's kind of a big one. And I think from an environmental perspective, we're starting to understand the downside of anything. We're starting to understand the human components, the environmental tolls that electric cars, batteries, etc., are having right now. And people are starting to, I think, wake up to the fact that you literally need natural resources to charge electric vehicles. And so that probably isn't, in the long run, the most sustainable option. You need oil to create the plastic that is in these parts. I mean, oil is just a natural part of almost everything we do in daily life. And so that just kind of seems like a pipe dream, if you will, that is the way of the future. So yeah, perhaps this is a great technology because you can use it in internal combustion engines. It's obviously Vettel, he's driving in Goodwood, and he said that under the caveat that he would only use synthetic fuels over petrol. They're allowing it. The fuel supplier is P1 Fuels. It's a German-based company, and they are per their website, they said, we have a 100% green solution for the 1.6 billion internal combustion engines roaming our roads today. So, you know, we talk about innovation in sport. We talk about how that innovation oftentimes translates into commercial products. And if anyone is going to be an advocate for this, a good advocate, I do think it's Sebastian Vettel, because a lot of people say that, well, he left F1 because of the hypocrisy of climate change. We don't 100% know that. He hasn't confirmed that, but I know that he got into some spats last year with Dan Crenshaw of Texas, and it's over the hypocrisy of it. And so I do think that if there's anyone who could push this stuff and perhaps get it into people's, I mean, here we are talking about it. I'm sure a lot of people don't know what this is. So I think it's a good step. And yeah. What are your thoughts?
No, it's the right, you know, it's, again, I don't know the details of these things. I don't want to claim to know or understand how these fuels work and whatnot. But if you can tell me that I can get V10s back in Formula One and it will have less of an impact on the environment than the current turbo hybrid V6s, and we get that sound back and we can get racing to sound like racing again, like, that makes me happy, right? Again, I don't claim to know or understand how it all works, but there's research out there. I probably should dig in a little bit deeper. I would love to see this. It is fascinating to me, though. It is fascinating. And I remember posting one of his Vettel's runs last year and the video of it. And I'm like, oh, wow, this is crazy. And then, of course, it's like a totally carbon neutral fuel and all this stuff. And you're like, okay, this is where you get me, you know, someone like me, someone who's watched motorsport for a long time and misses the days of those V10s, V8s. That's how you suck me in. That, okay, you got me now.
Yeah.
Like, let's do this. You know, you're talking about cost effectiveness. Well, we're already spending millions and billions of dollars in F1, right? They're already spending so much money. To me, it's like, could this be a way of spending money the right way? Like, that's, I like it, right? I like it. Again, I don't know how much money it costs or whatnot, but they're already spending billions. Is this going to double the expenditures? No, I don't think so. And the only people I think it's going to piss off is obviously the oil companies that are clearly so heavily involved in F1. There's got to be a way to figure that out. If we could do that, then yeah, I think it's the way. I just don't know enough about how it works, what it takes to produce it, what it costs to produce it. The only thing I can see, though, is, like I said, who are you getting upset, and what do those people do for the sport? Those people, those companies, they provide a lot of money. If that money goes away, then, you know, it's just easier to say, we'll just use we'll just keep trying to change the engines. We'll just keep trying to change the way these engines consume regular fossil fuel, which produces what we have now. And,
right,
you know, I'm not the biggest fan, but
I just think that whatever. With the partnerships with Aramco and Petronas, and there's a lot of money involved. Shell, exactly. There's a lot of money involved in Formula One with big oil. And unless they created their own synthetic fuels, I don't see that going away. Again, F1 is a very expensive sport. You need a lot of money to make this thing run. And so unless one of these entities or several of these entities can come to the table with as much money, if not more money, and if not more resources than they have, I don't see it replacing traditional fuel, but I do think that perhaps selling it on a more commercial level to the average consumer. You know, if you want to take most globally recognized motorsports, one of the most globally recognized drivers, and have them be an advocate for this product, if it actually works, if it's actually sustainable, if it's actually cost effective, then sure, I think it is. It's a great move. Again, with F1, in terms of replacing, I don't see that happening for, you know,
no,
any time in the near future.
And I agree.
Yeah,
I totally agree. I don't see it happening just because of where the dollars are flowing from and where, you know, the money, where they get their money, you know, where they get their dollars. So it's, you're in a conundrum if you're F1 or if you're teams, is do we do something, I guess I'm going to say groundbreaking, but I think the rally championship uses these P1 fuels, from what I understand. So it's not like it's groundbreaking, but it would be still pretty big deal, right? If F1 were to do it. And like, is that worth, and is saving the environment, right? Like, let's put that one out there. Is saving the environment worth the hassle? You know, if, and again, I'm saying that tongue in cheek. I don't mean that. I'm saying that that's probably what conversations are being had. It's like, well, is this worth pissing off Aramco and Shell and other oil providers?
Well, perhaps at best we talk about the planes and the actual cost that is involved in shipment and logistics. Mm-hmm. So maybe if they are able to create, fuel for airlines, that might be a more effective approach than, again, trying to get into Formula One. And I think if we could have every plane in this entire world running off of, you know, what is it, biomass waste, why not? I think maybe that is the way forward. But yeah, I everything in F1 always goes back to money. Everything. So, and politics too. So I think the politics and the money involved in big oil, it makes most of this technology very prohibitive.
Mm-hmm.
But Agree. Again, for commercial purposes, maybe we can hope for this to, you know, be introduced at some time. And like we said, I mean, Vettel isn't that controversial. I mean, I think that people listen to him because he speaks with the voice of reason. And if anyone is going to push this, I think he's a great person to market it for them. And I hope that something is actually done with this in the future.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. Speaking of money, the quarter one numbers came in for Liberty Media, and F1 brought in $381 million in total revenue, which was a 6% increase year over year. Liberty Media also owns the Atlanta Braves, who made $31 million in quarter one. Quarter one is out of season for the Braves, but that was still an increase in 35% year over year. Liberty Media making money. Clearly, that's the goal. A lot of the things we talk about, a lot of the conversations we have boil down to, well, Liberty Media is a for-profit investment conglomerate. This is what they do. And a lot of folks that don't necessarily want to understand that are so confused or jaded by moves that are made, right? I.e. Vegas. They see this Las Vegas Grand Prix happening and this is bad for the sport. Great, but you don't own the sport. I don't own the sport. Liberty Media owns the sport. Liberty Media needs to make money. Liberty Media needs to satisfy stakeholders and shareholders. Liberty Media is here to increase the value of its properties, which includes Formula One and the Atlanta Braves and the Drone Racing League and whatever else they own. So when you see these numbers come out, like, what's the first thing that comes to your head? Or maybe not the first thing, but what do you think about when you see these numbers being released all the time? How does it make you feel?
Well, was this a therapy session? I like it. okay. everyone, as a content creator, we read a lot of comments. We are trying to stay on top of trends and things that fans are saying. And almost every single time you have a revenue report come out, automatically the instinctive response from people is, this is going to be the downfall of Formula One. They're abandoning fan bases and they're making it an intangible product for many people. Mm-hmm. The only way they'll ever be able to see F1 is on TV. But at the same time, those TV ratings also drive revenue. So they might not be able to afford to attend a race, but they're still contributing to the demand of the sport that they can't afford to attend. So you kind of have to say this, but this is in a lot of ways a pick your lane kind of deal. Do you either support F1 or do you not support F1? And I think that could be F1's undoing. Now, I don't see that happening. I think F1 is doing everything it can to make a shinier product, if you will. They're constantly trying to push the envelope in terms of how can we make this a better race that people want to come to. And you have people right now who are going to Las Vegas and they're driving by the paddocks and they're like, the Las Vegas paddock, and they're like, this is so cool. I can't believe this is happening. I have friends who just moved to Vegas and right outside their condo in on the strip, they can see the paddock, like right there. And so people are just really excited about the products that they continue to produce. And until that happens, I don't see there being a massive drop in revenue. Their operating income decreased slightly from last year to this year, from $19 million to $16 million, but that was due to a $4 million increase in corporate expenses. So this always goes back to the money. And obviously F1, the products that they're putting out, they're making money and they're not concerned with people the affordability of the sport, rather. Like, what do you think on that?
No, I just, I look at these numbers and it's like, okay, increasing is good if I'm a business, which I own a business. So to me, anytime you see, numbers going up year over year, you're happy, right? And also that's also off-season, mostly off-season for Formula One as well, right? I said it was off-season for the Braves, but it's also Q1 is pretty much off-season for Formula One, aside from a few things that happen. It's one of those double-edged swords, so to speak. You want to be able to afford going to races as a fan. Yes, 100%. But at the same time, you want your favorite sport to survive and continue. Yes. I want my sport to be there. Well, in order for that to happen, it needs to grow, or it needs to at least make money to continue. And where a lot of people can't understand how that works is because of the scale of the numbers, right? Like, your tiny household budget in comparison to Formula One's budget pales in comparison.
Yeah.
But if you were to take your tiny household budget and expand it into what, the F1 operation is, which is so unfathomable for most people, then you'd probably understand it a little bit better, right? How it works. Just like your goal is to make more money year over year as a household or as a person, like, you want to ideally make more money year over year. The same thing with F1. It's just the scale is larger, but because the numbers are bigger, right? Oh my God, $381 million in revenue. That's outrageous. Yeah. Okay. But there's hundreds of thousands of employees across teams and F1. There's, how many different races or, circuits and countries that are being traveled to. There's how many different cars and the research and the technology and the advertising and the marketing. And $381 million is probably not even that much if we're being, serious for a second. So it's, you know, to me, it's kind of like, it's funny when I see these conversations happen and people complain. And it's not funny because I think, you know, poor you can't, you know, you can't travel or you can't go to these races. I think it's funny because when you actually step back and look at it from a 30,000 foot view, you realize there's just more to it. You know, there's just more involved. And unless you truly understand the inner workings of a business, never mind, you know, Formula One, you'll never really understand why some of the moves are being made. That's my take.
I couldn't agree more with that. And I think there's a lot of people who make a lot of comments about, oh, well, this is how I would run a business. And most of these people, they've never owned a business and they probably will never own a business. So the decisions that you have to make when you own a business, they're very different than the decisions you have to make running a household. And you're running literally thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of people's households with the decisions that you make. They're having to look out for the people that they employ. They're having to look out for, and people need to put this into perspective too, that every time a race or any other event that Liberty Media, to an entity that Liberty Media owns, sells out or does really well, there are businesses in those areas that make a lot of money. And for some countries, F1 is their top money-making event every year. And that's not just F1. That's not just the promoters who are making the money. That's the restaurants. That's the bars. That's the hotels. That's the Ubers. That's the, you know, the contractors. There's so many people involved and so much money being moved around. And the bigger these events get, the more money these regions and these communities make. So, you know, it's, these are things people have to think about. I mean, for example, the Australian Grand Prix hosted 445,000 fans, and the Atlanta Braves home opener on April 6th had 42,000 fans, which is the largest crowd for a home opener in history. And so these are people outside of these sports, outside of Formula One and outside of Major League Baseball, who are making money off of this. And so, yeah, you know, there's always going to be the people who say, well, F1 is just in it for the money. True. But so are the people who also benefit from this. And there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, I'm 100% with you. That argument of like, you're just in it for the money. Well, okay. But so is everybody else, you know, and show me someone who's truly not. And again, in it for the money is such a harsh term, because it's like, show me someone who doesn't want to make money, or someone that doesn't want to put food on their table, or somebody that doesn't want, like, and then have that conversation. Tell me you truly don't care about money, but you're probably not on social media if you don't care about money, right? You probably don't own a phone, and you don't have, you probably live somewhere in the Himalayas, right? On the mountain. Like, you truly don't care about anything, you know, money, like, monetary possessions, you know, earthly possessions. Yeah. You probably don't care about those kind of. So we're having this conversation with people who all pretty much care about money. In some way, shape, or form. I'm not saying you care about being a billionaire, but I'm saying you probably care about having enough money to sustain your life, whatever that is.
Right. And I think that if these communities had a problem with what was happening, they would probably say, look, we don't want to host a Formula One race, or, you know, hey, we don't like the Braves because, you know, taxpayers have to fund a certain segment of that and blah, blah, blah. You don't really see those arguments happening to a point where it shuts a race down. Yeah, everybody complains about, you know, tax implications of hosting major events, obviously with Austin here. Our taxpayer money goes towards infrastructure, roads, et cetera, airports, you know, all the things that make Formula One accessible. But nobody in Austin is complaining about the revenue. And if people really didn't love that aspect of it, they would say, okay, we can't host this race. We need to do what's best in the best interest of our locals and creating a more affordable community. But obviously that's not happening.
Yep.
So don't get mad at Formula One, or don't get mad at Liberty Media for what's happening, because they're not, you know, they're not necessarily totally responsible for this. It's the communities, it's the people that that own the hotels, et cetera. Like, they are directly responsible for price, you know, increases and making these events unaffordable. So if you're going to go after anyone, go after them. But I don't think you're going to pick a, I don't think you're going to be very successful picking a fight with the local restaurant owner.
No, 100%. There's the internet and the complainers on the internet, or just the complainers in general. And then there's the people that are actually in it and that benefit from these events and benefit from the sport, and the businesses that are supporting the sport. And those people are not going to argue with you on, you know, Liberty Media and Formula One making money year over year. One thing that people will complain about, though, and continue to complain about no matter what, is regulations. McLaren's Andrea Stella said that the FIA must consider simplifying F1 regulations. I don't know. He says regulatory framework has become more complicated. Innovation and evolution has been complicated by financial regulations. Teams are investing in financial departments to stay within cost cap. What do you think here? Is this evolution? Is this holding the sport back? Is this... Where is Stella coming from? Other than the fact that his team is in the shitter.
I think this all goes back to the cost cap being a hindrance in a lot of ways. It's like, if you don't design the right car that year, you're out. And you can just go ahead and let Red Bull run the table at this point. And, you know, again, we always want to kind of go back to that quote from Christian Horner. Well, design a better car. So to loosely quote that. And he's not wrong in that respect. But again, not everybody has an Adrian Newey. And evidently, or allegedly, last month, Mercedes was really close to getting Newey. And then, you know, obviously that didn't happen. But, you know, not every team has that. And there's a constant shuffle effect of Formula One, where if you're really successful with your team, you're going to be a high poach target, and people are going to be throwing a lot of money at you. So, you know, this is when loyalty is a big deal in really any business, not just F1. But we talk about the cost cap almost every single episode as being a problem. And, you know, part of Stella's comment, it went back to, if I recall, the fact that it took the FIA so long to make this determination about Red Bull and their penalty. And, you know, it's like, who's leading whom here? Why are regulations, you know, if you're going to impose a hard stop on the cap and say, regardless of inflation, regardless of sprint weekends, regardless of X, Y, and Z, this is our hard stop on the budget for this year. You cannot go over this budget. Then why does it take months for a team, once you've gone over their audit sheets, to decide, well, you know, all you have to do is look at the balance sheet and be like, okay, yeah, you went over. Okay, this is what your penalty is going to be. And with Red Bull, they got a slap on the wrist. So, you know, we talk about what the FIA could possibly do to mitigate this in the future. Well, I think that they've missed their opportunity already with how they handled Red Bull. And so, you know, I do agree that the regulatory framework is more complicated. It should be more simplified. But until they are able to simplify it, I mean, I don't see teams trying to stick within the rules. I think you're going to find this year, especially, a lot of teams are coloring very much outside those financial lines, trying to figure out ways to infuse technology into their cars without necessarily spending from within, or at least having, you know, things they have to report. So, you know, I guess it's going to be one of those things in the next couple of years of which team can hide it better.
Interesting. So, yeah, I mean, when you think of how long it took, like you said, to penalize Red Bull, it took until late October 22 for exceeding a budget in 21. To me, that's either this is similar to like VAR in football or instant replay in NFL or any sport, really. sometimes it's like, okay, these things are so obvious to everybody. And the referee or whoever will go under and watch the VAR, watch the replay, and it takes them forever to come out with a decision that everyone knows what the obvious call is. And then they come out and they give the call, or maybe sometimes, and sometimes it's they give some reason that sounds absolutely ridiculous, and they don't even make the obvious call. They decide, oh, well, it's not apparent. It's not obvious. But to everybody else, it's truly obvious.
Yeah.
This is kind of exactly what we're dealing with the FIA. It took so long because they were probably thrown that the top team they now have to penalize. How do we make this? Oh my goodness. How do we make this call? Like, they're also, you know, the biggest complainers. At least they were at some point between them and Mercedes, you know, pretty big command. They all are, but I'm going to say that they're the squeakiest wheel between Red Bull and Mercedes. It's one of those two. And they decided to give out a very lenient penalty for something that I believe it was Ross Brawn had said when they first were talking about introducing it. He said it would be a swift and harsh, you know, penalty for whoever breaks this. And sure enough, you had your top team break it for whatever reason. Doesn't matter. Catering, aerodynamic, whatever it was, it doesn't matter. It was broken. And for a sport or a series that will penalize a team for a rear wing being open by 20 millimeters or whatever it was when Hamilton got penalized in Brazil in 21, 80 millimeter, whatever it was, I forgot the exact number. But you have to think, like, if those rules are going to happen in one situation, they should be followed, or the way they're interpreted and followed should happen across the board, whether it's financial or whether it's sporting or technical, whatever it might be. It is becoming, and I don't totally disagree with Stella here, it is becoming too complex. It is becoming, you know, overwhelming. It's becoming too complex for the FIA to enforce their own rules, right? They've written things so complex, they don't even know how to enforce them. Like, that's what's happening, right? This NFL, for our American fans, NFL, the catch. What is a catch? It's a very simple act of the game.
Yeah.
But the ruling, you know, within the last decade or so of what a catch is, how a catch is determined, was so complex that referees were not even able to call, you know, questionable catches correctly. Because the ruling was just so complex. It wasn't a simple do this, that's a catch. It was, well, if this is happening while this is happening, and if the knee is falling while the arm is going out, but the ball slightly moves, which you can't see unless you slow it down and zoom in, then it's not a catch. And it's like, oh my God, what are we doing here? What are we doing here? We're taking away from the spirit of the sport. And yeah. I feel like that's what's happening. You know, feels like every week we're doing something to take away from the spirit of the sport.
Yeah.
And I do fear that these regulations are, you know, too complex or just too, I don't want to say one-sided, but, you know, this week we heard Domenicali say it would be wrong to interfere with Red Bull's dominance. And I don't disagree, right? I don't disagree. They clearly figured it out. They don't deserve to be punished for figuring things out. But in past years, other technical directives were introduced mid-season, to kind of muffle, or I don't want to, muffle's not the right word, but, you know, to slow down certain teams that figured things out. But now all of a sudden it's like, this is too much. And again, I'm not playing conspiracy here. I'm not playing that game. But it's like, sometimes the words that are coming out of these people's mouths just don't match. And I wonder why and when all of this comes out like, when does this all come out and say, like, this is what was going on behind the scenes, this is what was happening? Like, I would love to know. I would love to know. Because to me, it's just, if you just look back at it and you give, if you were to tell someone who has no tie to the sport at all and just say, hey, these are the situations that are happening, what does that sound like? They would be like, oh yeah, that sounds like there's some weird interference going on here, and there's no interference going on when it's this team or when it's that team. It's like, okay. Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah, I mean, but also
we talk to add on that one.
We talk about Red Bull figuring things out and how they shouldn't be penalized. Well, remember when Mercedes figured out DRS? Mm-hmm. And that was banned. I mean, so it's like, are we going to punish innovation? If we're going to punish innovation, like, we need to punish it outright. Like, if you create something that makes, you know, your car so much faster than every other car, then some technical component of your car should be banned. Like, because it's unfair. Yeah. So, you know, it's kind of it's perceived as a double standard. And I fully understand why people look at that. But Stella also said that, he said, to quote, especially nowadays, I would say even the regulatory framework has become more complicated than in the past. Think about the financial regulations. So yeah, to, you know, you said it, if they can't figure out how to penalize teams, how the hell can they figure out how to really assess and review every single team's financial paperwork? How can they regulate mm-hmm. that in an effective way?
Yeah.
So again, we talk about the cap almost every single week, and it's like, why is the cap not a good thing? Why is it not working? Well, this is case in point once again.
Well, also, and so Mercedes in 2020 had the dual axis steering too, which ended up getting banned.
That's what
but
I meant.
They did let them complete the season with it. So there are some folks that'll say, like, well, they banned it. Well, yeah, they banned it, but it was after the season. So I just have to say that part. But to answer what you were just saying, how can you continue, you know, enforcing a financial cap and then decide mid-season to be like, we're going to add more sprint races, or we're going to do this weird new sprint format? And it's like, but wait a minute, you gave us a cap based off of different set of rules. Now you're or a different set of circumstances. Now you're changing those circumstances and you're still expecting us to fit under this cap. Well, we haven't planned for that. And so that's where I do feel for, not feel, but like, that's where I do understand, like, certain teams that want to do certain things. I'm not advocating for breaking the rules, but a precedent has been set, right? For, you know, for a team like Red Bull to say, you know what? We can break the rule. The penalty's not that harsh. Big deal.
Exactly.
And realistically, that's what, you know, will and could happen, or could and will happen, going forward with other teams. And honestly, I wouldn't blame any team. If any team at this point, any team, even Red Bull itself, you know what? Yeah. Break the rule again. What does it matter? What does it matter?
Yeah,
because you literally have given us zero inclination that the penalty that's going to be levied is going to be crippling. Now, some will say, well, maybe, you know, the second half of the year where they have less wind tunnel time, it's going to affect them. You know what? They're going to be so far ahead by that point, it won't even matter.
Exactly. They're
front loading. But if I'm Red Bull or any, well, of course. I mean, I don't think they have. I think they've got more speed. I'm with George Russell on this one. I think they've got more speed in the bag that they're just not letting out yet, because they don't want to cause more, you know, of a investigation here. I think they've got so much speed in the bag, they're just saying, you know what, let's just keep it under wraps for now, and we'll just keep saying we're bringing upgrades whenever we bring some upgrades, and we'll gain a little bit of speed here, a little bit of speed here, but Yeah, I do think that there's definitely a something that is wrong, and there's definitely something that it needs to be figured out with how Formula One, FIA wants to enforce and also simplify ruling. Because the more complicated things get and the more they want to change and add and make the sport exciting, it doesn't make it exciting when people don't know what's actually going on. So as much of excitement you want to add, you squash all that the minute it's like, yeah. Well, wait a minute. Now a race ended under some idiotic rule that no one really understands, or something happens during a race that nobody really understands because the rule is so complicated. That's how you ruin all the momentum that you're building. And I mean, I will give it to them. They are building great momentum with the marketing blitz and with Drive to Survive and everything else. But you want to keep people actually watching. You want to keep people interested. You want to keep people understanding. The biggest issue I get, my brother and I, this is a really good example. My brother and I went to one of my little cousin's lacrosse matches this past week. And we've both followed sport our entire life. Lacrosse was just never one of those things that was popular at the time we were in, you know, in school and whatnot. And you know, lacrosse has clearly become more popular. But my brother kept saying to me, I don't understand what's going on. Like, I don't fully understand the rules. And because of that, he was totally just not interested in it at all. The interest was completely like, he's like, I have zero interest in watching this because I can't understand certain things that are happening. Like, why is this, you know, person coming off? Why is this person, why is there no penalty for this thing happening, or foul, or whatever you want to call it? And so because of that, it was like, you know what? I'd rather just walk away and spend my time doing something else. Like, that's what can and will happen with a sport like F1, or, you know, any motorsport in general. When you're trying to get these casuals to come in and enjoy your sport, but they can't easily pick up on things other than cars go fast around in circles. Right? Like, yeah. That now you're really like, you're not building on momentum. You're just slowing it down.
Yeah. And I think that's what's happening right now. And yeah, you've got a lot of teams and a lot of people who say, well, they know the cap is a good thing because it prevents these teams from spending $500 million on a car. Well, okay. And,
yeah.
And what has changed from that? What has really changed? You've got a Red Bull that is leaps and bounds better than every other team. And now you're tired of that too. So it's, yeah. I don't know. Yeah. To Stella's point, I think that if you're going to have this many complicated regulations to the sport itself, and this mm-hmm. many complicated regulations to the financial aspect of the sport with almost zero enforcement, meaningful enforcement, then what is the point at the end of the day? I don't get it. It just seems like totally they're wasting our time. They're wasting our time. They're making the sport less enjoyable. I mean, honestly, if I'm going to watch Formula One, I want to watch a cutthroat version of F1. I don't care. And this is going to sound really, really, heartless, so to speak, but I don't care if a team can't keep up. There are so many people who have a lot of money, a lot of resources, and a lot of time who would love to get into Formula One at any cost. And let them have your spot if you can't keep up. If you're going to make this the most expensive sport in the world, this traveling circus, then go all out. Why not? That's my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it definitely is squelching innovation.
Yeah.
And I think that when you are a sport like F1 that is the pinnacle of motorsport, and that's, you know, pinnacle of innovation and all that, and that's how you want to promote yourself, present yourself, a budget cap just doesn't make sense. Now, I understand that you're trying to equalize things, but it doesn't help for what the essence of the sport actually is. Maybe putting a budget floor in and saying you have to spend minimum of this so that if you do, you know, want to become a new team, it's like you can't just be a cheap team. You can't be the Oakland Athletics of Formula One and decide we're not going to spend any money and we're just going to show up and race. Like that, you can't do that, right? You have to hit a minimum level. I can see that being more reasonable. And maybe maybe there is a cap, but the cap is far higher. So it's like you can spend between these dollars, minimum of 100 million, maximum of 500 million. I don't know. Like, yes, it's a big range. But look, even with a cap, there's still a massive rate, right? You still have Red Bull at the top and you still have teams like Williams at the bottom, Haas at the bottom. Like, even with a cap, you're still creating that gap. So anyway. I think that brings us to a close for today's show. Next week, I have a special guest, Molly. A bunch of red flags. She is awesome. And we'll talk some technical stuff. We will go into Indy 500 and Monaco. We'll talk a little bit about both of those. And probably talk to her a little bit about some technical stuff. If you have technical questions, this is the week to submit your questions because Molly will be the person to answer them for you. I'm super excited to record with her and get that episode out to you next week. And again, congratulations to our lovely co-host VF for graduating one of, if not the most prestigious schools in the world. Very proud of you. Excited for what it brings, and very glad to have you as part of this show. On that note, I'm Vincenzo. I'm going to stop talking now.
I'm VF, and we'll catch you guys. Well, Vincenzo will catch you next week. I will be back in 2 weeks. Enjoy Monaco. Thank you so much for tuning into the VF1 show. If you liked it, please don't forget to hit the subscribe button. And for previews of next week's show, follow us on Instagram and Twitter at the VF Castro and Vincenzo Landino.